Good afternoon, everyone. All right. Make sure this thing's working. All right. Welcome, and I just want to thank you for coming. And if you are here for God's call to serve Sojourner, you're in the right place. Emma is kind of passing out some hands out for us to kind of, I'll talk more about that later, but let me start with prayer, and then we'll go from there. Father, it is in the name of Jesus that we come before you. Lord, as we address this issue of your calling, ask Lord God to serve and love the sojourner. I pray that you will just open our hearts, open our mind, Lord God, and just, I pray that you give us the ability to do what you have called us to do today. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. By the way of introduction, my name is Shangguak Deng. It's actually pronounced Shangguak. So, but as you see, it's written Shangguak. And I work as a deacon at West End Presbyterian Church. My wife and I came in 2004. We came via Syria, but we are originally from South Sudan. And I will talk a little bit more later about when we came, my wife came, we all came like she was in labor when we were crossing the Atlantic Ocean. And 3 days later, our first baby was born. So imagine coming to U.S. In labor with very limited English. And you know, so it was really intense, but I will talk more about that later. There is my wife, Med Ben. Emanuela is right here. Gracie, Mimi, and Tiam. So you can imagine that our house is very, 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 you know, active and chaotic. As I said, I serve as a deacon in West End Presbyterian Church, and also I work as a director of neighborhood outreach there. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about biblical understanding of refugees. I think many of you have been into other refugee workshop, which is really good. We'll give you an overview of what is going on, what this is, statistics and all of that. But today I will just talk a little bit about our call, respond to God's call to serve the refugees. So the way that I'm going to do it is that we're going to look for a few examples in the Bible about refugees, the reason they left their homes, and also I will talk a little bit about my background and also kind of my experience and marrying that with my faith, also when an immigration experience. And thirdly, I will share with you some of the personal stories and examples from encounter between West End and its immigrants friends, to just get us a sense of how we can better help immigrants and give us a sense of God's heart toward them, toward immigrants and refugees also. So this is how we're going to do it today. Just three, and bear with me as we go through that. I came upon this website. You can go and look at it. It's a really good resource for us. It will give you a sense of how many refugees in your area. It's Office of Refugee Resettlement. Go there and it will give you a sense of, and it has their website. You can click on your state and then it will give you how many refugees comes and where they are, the resettlement agency that in your area, it will give you that. So according to this website, in fiscal year of 2011, there were about 100,000 refugees that arrived in U.S. It's amazing. And they have put them in categories. They're refugees, asylees, and then people from Cuba and Haiti, and also they have like unaccompanied alien children, accompanied refugees, minors, and especially immigrant visas, which you have lottery visa and other immigrant visas that they, you know, it's amazing. So I'm not going to talk about that, but we will actually, if you go there, you will get a lot of information. Now, all of you here are here today because you know a refugee, or your churches want to serve a refugee, or you know an immigrant and you want to find a way how to kind of serve them, right? Is that, can I say that? Okay. But the question to ask ourselves is, why do we want to serve them? You know, why? Why do you want to serve them? Why bother? Because when we get into this, it's really not an easy ministry. It's messy. It's risky, right? So some key terms that you will run into talking about this topic, which is, and I want to share with you those key terms, probably you will run into. I know that. I know for sure. And that is refugee. They'll talk about refugee. Who is the refugee? And I was like, asylum seeker. Who is an asylum seeker? And then eternally displaced. We don't see this eternally displaced in America, but I'll talk more about that. Migrant and immigrants. Refugee, if you talk about refugee is a person who have been uprooted from their home, and they are in a different country and seeking refuge in a different country. They are not in their country, so they have been forced to leave their country. An asylum or asylum seeker is someone who, or she or he, will say that, I am a refugee, but their case has not yet been determined or evaluated. They have not given the status of refugee yet. They're waiting. They're in the process of getting there. So you see that in the people that come through a student visa, they get stuck in the airport, then they say, I'm here seeking asylum. Those are the people that, and then there is a process that they go through to get their, to get everything evaluated and get the status of refugee. And our internal displaced are people who have been forced to flee their country, their home, but within their country. You know, they are not in a different country. They are refugee within their own country. Migrant and immigrant are not necessarily people who are like refugees. They come out of their choice. Like those who came on a student visa or whatever, you know, they just come here. They're not really necessarily forcibly displaced. Just to get you an understanding of that, let me use myself as an example. So, you know, Sudan has been in war for a long time, south and north. They're fighting for many reasons. And my dad sent me to Khartoum to live with relatives. So leaving my hometown, I went to Khartoum. I became internally displaced because in Khartoum we lived in a displaced camp for people who are fleeing war from North Sudan, because the war mainly was in North Sudan. So I became internally displaced within my country. So, and then when we left Sudan to Syria, I became a refugee. And it was in Syria where I went through the refugee evaluation process. You know, there is this process, a very long process that you go through to get your case evaluated, and then hopefully you will get accepted and given a status of refugee. And when that happened, the UN said that you are under our protection. That country that you are in will never deport you. So you are given that status, you are safe in that country until they find somebody to a country where they can send you to. So we became refugees, and we are given our we have given refugee status, then resettled in Richmond, Virginia. It kind of makes sense? All right, so this is how most of the refugees are going to go through. What the Bible talks about refugee? I mean, from Genesis to Revelation, we see that this is a story of people. Us, our story. You know, the Bible talks that we are alien from God, right? We are enemy, right? In Genesis 3, we see the story of fall and what happened to Adam and Eve. You know, they because of their own sin, they were displaced by God, right? God banished them from the Garden of Eden, right, because of their own action and sin. they became alien from God, and God said, well, you can't live in here. He actually forced them to leave their home, their loving home, the Garden of Eden. Who don't want to live in Garden of Eden, right? But because of their sin, they were like displaced by God. And then you see in the case of Cain, Cain also, because he killed his brother, God said, my punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever find me will kill me. This is kind of the trauma the refugee go through. Like, I'm going to somewhere that I don't know. And because of his own sin and action. So one of the reason, actually, this is the main reason. Sin. We are living in a fallen world. And ever since that time, you know, we are fleeing from God. And so there are many reasons that people can talk about. What caused these people to flee their home? What caused them to go and leave their home? So we can talk about sin as being a main reason. And then in time of Noah, people were driven from their home in response to climate change and disaster. You see, Noah, what happened to Noah in that time? Noah and his son and his wife escaped the water, and they fled. Then you see in time of Abraham by famine. So those are some of the reason. Also, another reason that people flee their home is out of conflict, family conflict. You see in Hagar and Ishmael, human trafficking, the time of Joseph. So those are some of the reasons that really force people to flee and to seek refuge in other places. They don't choose to do it, but they are forced because of those things. And then here I'm going to talk more about this because it's kind of more of what do you see today? People driven out of their home in response to war or exile. In time of Israel, time of Esther, Nehemiah, Daniel. And here I want to share a little bit. This is because this is in my case. I will share my background here to talk a little bit about how I left South Sudan. So I was born in South Sudan in 1982. Most of you know, as I said, that South Sudan has been in war for a long time with North Sudan. This war actually took place in my hometown in South Sudan, and it affected that part of Sudan really horribly. It affected it and forced people to flee to the neighboring countries, to flee their homes, to leave everything, and just seek refuge in other places. My dad went to Malakal. Malakal is one of the town in South Sudan. But because of the school system was not really good, and public services were not really good, he decided to send me to Khartoum to live with relatives when I was 7. So 7-year-old, dad said, well, in order for you to go to school, I need to send you away. I need to send you to Khartoum to live with relatives. So here I go to Khartoum to live with these people. I don't know them. I was just, okay, we'll go because my dad wanted me to go to school. So he sent me to go to Khartoum to live with relatives. And it was in that time when I accepted Christ. You know, I went through a lot of really difficult moment and time in my life during that time. And one of the things, this is the thing that I went through, is that I was lost. And I did not have a sense of what is my identity, first of all, you know. And then my impact in life, I didn't know, do my life matter? I didn't have a sense of that as well. And also, for me at that time, I wanted to be with my dad and my family. Why would he send me away? So I was angry at my dad at that time. So at one time, they had a conference at the church that we went to, and so I went and attended that service, and somehow God really, when the altar call was called, something in my heart urged me to just go and ask for prayers. So I went and asked for prayer, and the pastor said, "What do you want me to pray for?" I said, "I just want Jesus in my life." And from that time, I accepted Christ in my life, and little by little, I began to grow in the Bible. I began to attend the church normally, and God began to change my heart. God began to change my view on my surrounding. God began to work in my heart and began to just show me and give me a sense of that my identity is in Christ. I do matter. And in fact, I have to forgive my dad because he loved me. You know, he has to, you know, it was very hard because a father would not do that unless he doesn't love his son. You know, he sacrifices his love by sending me away so that I can benefit and have a better future. That was a sacrifice that I came to realize. You know, it took me a long time. It wasn't overnight, you know. You know, it took me time to kind of discover and get that. So this is so how I came to America. So I went from South Sudan to North Sudan, and then my older brother was in North Sudan going to school, and he was married, has his children there. He made his way and went to Italy to study. And because he cannot come back to Sudan because of political issues and reason, he decided that he would send they need to meet with his family somewhere in a third kind of place. So they said, "Well, Syria, let's go to Syria." And his wife, blessed his her heart, she said, "Well, your brother is living with these people here. Can we bring him over with us?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure, let's bring him over." So God worked in an amazing way, and he kind of orchestrated all those things for me to go with my brother's family to Syria. And that's how I left Sudan and living with my relatives. So it was in Syria when we began the process, as I said earlier, the process of becoming a refugee and coming here.
So how old were you?
My age was about 15. 15 years old, 15, 16. So we went with them and lived in Syria. Now, he was working on getting his family to Italy. And he had a student visa and a student resident card. He only can take his immediate family, not me. So he did all this program, and he was able to get his wife there and later his daughter. And here I was left in Syria again to live with people from my country, people that were not really relatives, just people that we kind of got to know. And so we didn't have a choice, so stay with them. And it was in Syria when I met my wife, met Ben, and we got married in Syria. And together we were granted refugee status. And I think God opened that door for us to come here instead of going to Europe. So, so that's how I ended up in Richmond. So when we were accepted, they say, "You're going to Richmond." It's like, "Richmond? Where is Richmond?" "Do you know anybody in Richmond?" We don't know anybody in Richmond. So you don't get to choose where to go. They choose for you. The UN choose for you. They will say, "You're going to this place," and sometimes they'll show you a map. It's like, this is your, you know, where you're going to be, and then we just kind of look in the map, and then you come here. So, actually, what happened when you come here? Just talk a little bit about that, because it gives you a sense of clarity about if you have people that are refugees. You think, who's helping them? You know, right? How are they getting around, right? So we didn't know that. So we were like, "We're going to Richmond," and it's amazing. They'll give you a bag that has everything. It's like kind of your identity. It has IOM on it, and they all said, "You know, kind of hold on to this bag. Don't lose it. If you lose it, that's it. You're gonna get lost." And then every time you go to an airport, they will have somebody that with the same bag, and you kind of identify yourself with those people, like the workers, immigration workers. So we have this bag, and we know We didn't know this, you know. So every time we get out of the airplane, we would meet those people. They would be, you know, standing and waiting for us. So we come to Richmond, and we came through ICC, through CCC, Catholic Commonwealth Charity. I don't know how many of you here know that organization. We came through them. They sponsor us. And when we landed in Richmond, we had three people assigned to us. One is a caseworker who will work with you, getting you like to get to for you to have you go file for Social Security, get you your immunization, and just get you to get your appointment, doctor's appointment, all those things. So that's his job. Another person that they assigned to us is an English coordinator, somebody who will tell you here, go there for English. And then there is the other guy, this is a job expertise that they will assign you another guy to help you look for a job. So there are those three people. And then they have a budget for each family for 3 or 4 months. They'll said you're covered. Your house rent is covered, your bill covered, everything for 3 months. And they have to work hard to find a job for you within this period, 3 months. So the guy, yes?
There's a place for you to live?
There is a place for you to live. But before you come, they will have a place for you already, rented and ready for you. They have some few furniture in there and, you know, to just get you started. And that's how really, if you run into somebody who said they're a refugee, they're here, you should ask them who is sponsoring you. This is really will save you a lot of time and to just get you a sense of what organization they came through, and then from there you can kind of help them because you don't want to overlap what they are doing, so you kind of just get that.
Did you know English? You could speak English?
I could speak little, very, very little, not much. And my wife too, very little English. We didn't speak that much English. Yeah. So this is a little bit of my background and how we got here. And of course, there are some reasons people kind of leave. You run into these people, flee their home out of persecution, religion persecution, political or ethnic persecution. What else we need to talk to about here? I told you about that. After 3 days we came here, my wife gave birth to my daughter, right? So, you want to hear that?
Yes.
So my wife was 7 months pregnant at that time, and we went to the doctor to kind of say, hey, is it safe for us to travel? He's like, yeah, it's safe for you to travel. That's okay. We could go without any problem. But 2 weeks has passed from our visit to the doctor, and there come the big day for us, March 3rd, 2004. You know, our flight was scheduled to take off at 12 a.m., sorry. And at 8 p.m., we were celebrating, praying, and friends were over. My wife, an unexpected thing happened. She started to go in labor pain at 8 o'clock. You know, so we rushed to the doctor and we said, doctor, what is going on? We need to make sure because in 4 hours we are leaving. The doctor shocked and said, the baby was coming that night. He said, the baby was coming that night. Our reaction was like, this could not happen. This is, no, this can't happen. You know, what do we do? You know, we were like, the office is closed. We have our ticket, our visa. Our luggage is, everything is kind of packed up. We are ready. What could we do? You know, and if we cancel it, we know there will be a lot of consequences with the UN office. Because they would not understand that. They would like, and people already here in this side of the state, they already know that we are coming. So it was very difficult. So we had to venture in that situation and take risk and come. The journey was a long one, very long, very long. We didn't enjoy it. I was always worried. And my wife didn't enjoy it, actually. I kept looking at her, are you okay?
Yeah.
So we were worried that the baby would really, could come anytime. What if she comes in, you know, in the airplane, the airport? We were just having all these thoughts. And thankfully, Emanuela was not born in the airport or in the airplane. She was born in St. Mary, in Richmond, Virginia, just right after we... So we got here, we got to Richmond on, I think it was on a Thursday. Friday, we went to get our Social Security. And then that night, like after 5, I called my caseworker and said, you have to come right now. You know, and then he came, he rushed us to the hospital. The next day, Emanuela was born. So it was, and English, we did not have any document that said, how old was the baby? Is the baby healthy? They kept asking us, what did you do back there? Where are the doctor's papers? I don't know anything. We don't have any of those papers. So they had to go through all those, you know, ultrasound and checking, is it a girl or a boy, and just do all of that. So we thank God that Emanuela was born and she was healthy. And we named her Emanuela because we really believe that God was with us. It was totally God. Emanuela, God is with us. God, you must be with us in this situation. So, you know, it is now it's clear to me when I look at the stories of the refugee in the Bible. And in my own experience, I began to see God's heart toward the refugee. Personally, I began to understand that He has a purpose in the life of the sojourner, in the life of the immigrant, in the life of the refugees. And I began to understand that my life matters. Many refugees go through this cycle, oh, I don't know, my life matters, but my life is really matters, even when I did not know that. God also was accomplishing His purpose through the life of the refugee, which we just saw in the Bible, in Adam's life, in Joseph's life, in all these people. God was accomplishing His purpose. You know, He was doing that in bringing about, you know, His plan of redemption. And I think we sometimes kind of forget that. And it's true about those people who we see in the Bible, and it's true about the immigrant that you will run into. And that you just, it's very true. So God is with the forcibly displaced people. He's revealing Himself to them over and over again, caring for them, often accomplishing His purpose through them. And also, as Christian, we have a divine mandate to love and to serve the sojourner, right? So God expects His people, expects us to care for them in tangible ways. And also, Jesus identified Himself with the poor, as we heard today in the sermon. John 15 says that we were called to live in this alien world. We are actually alien. Our own true identity and relationship to the temporal world. We are not here forever. We are here just temporarily. This is not our final destination, right? We are all like passing by, passing through. So we can relate to the refugee and the immigrant, the alien among us, right? Because we are all in this together. And also, you know, Christians who come from Egypt, if you know any, they really kind of, they are facing this persecution where they are from. And even some of us sometimes we face that in our workplaces, that it's very hard to share the gospel with others. And this is a promise in the Bible that we will face this persecution wherever we go, right? So through the sanctuary into this present day, we are experiencing persecution for our faith. So we kind of relate also with the refugees. So this is God's heart for the refugees. And this time, I will skip this and go and talk about how West End serve refugees. I think this will be interesting for us to kind of get a sense of, in your context, how can you help, right? Our West End ministries began in, I think, 1998, before I came, you know, actually began with Bible club in a playground. Few guys went just to check out the neighborhood. What God put us in this place? What does He has for us here? You know, what God have for us? So few people went to the community and began to explore and see what God has for us here. And they began this Bible club in the playground. And you know, God began to open our heart, began to open our mind to see that there is an opportunity for us to serve here. Because at that time, there were many immigrants that coming to that particular neighborhood from all over the world. You know, from Congo, from Africa, from Middle East. So God began to open our heart that there is our eyes that there is a ministry here. And then from that it started ESL, it started tutoring programs, it started other programs that we really began to see happening at West End. So it was just from that simple action of just going, what is around you? Just go and check and see what is around you. What is around here that we can do? And from that, just started this ministry to the kids, ESL, food pantry. Hundreds of people come to West End for ESL. And our ESL, actually, we do it in partnership with the CCC and with the Virginia Council of Churches. They use our building. We are not running it. They use our building because people can walk into the building, and they run it. They kind of organize everything, and we just provide a place for them. Now these days, they are saying that they only can offer ESL for refugees, which really create a problem for us as a church. We want to be a welcoming church. So now we have an opportunity as a church to start our own ESL program. And that's why, you know, today and this conference is very important for us, because we want to learn how to do that, our own ESL classes. So think about those stuff that as you, in your own contacts, and see how you can serve your... So I said there's ESL classes at West End Presbyterian Church. People from Bhutan, Nepal, Iraq, Egypt, Sudan, Uganda, Russia, Latin America, and Bangladesh, they come and participate in English classes. I said about we are partnering with Virginia Council of Churches and other organizations. One of the really cool things we do is we want our presence in the neighborhood. So we do outreach programs with the kids. During the school year, we do X Games once a month. We go in the neighborhood, take kids, whoever want to come, we take them to a nearby park, do a lot of like activities, games, scavenger hunt, relays, all fun activities with the kids. And then before the end, we share with them the gospel. We talk to them about why we do this. We love you because Jesus loves us, and also Jesus loves you. This is why we do this. We want you to know that He loves you. We want you to know that He cares for you. Life is difficult. Your mom is working. Your dad is working. But know this. God is for you. We get a chance to tell them that. We get a chance to share with them the gospel every time we meet. And then we have the community fund that we do at the parking lot of the church. People can come and they can participate in that. Ice cream party. So good. Who doesn't like ice cream? At the end of the school year, we invite them to just come, you know, the last day of the school, come and eat ice cream with us. So it's another way of just being in the community, right? We don't do any program that day. Just come. We want to get to know you. We love you. We are here for you. We are family. So we just kind of do that with them. It's sometimes we just think like, what can we do? What do we do? Just be there. Be present in the community and see God will open so much door for you. We are gearing up now to a truck club. This is also one of the activities we do in the summer with the kids. We do it from June to mid-August. And we take them to collegiate or to a nearby school to teach them about running techniques, passing the baton, you know, relays, just all about track. And, you know, out of that, kids began to be encouraged to even go and try out at their schools, at middle school. So we have that happening. You know, they are on their track team in the school because of track club. So it's really it's a neat thing for us to do, and that we are doing with the kids in the community. Another cool thing that happened at West End is that there are three different fellowships that meet at the church. They speak different languages. We have the Nepali. They speak the Nepali community. We have the Latino and the Arabic, which is the Sudanese. And they meet every Sunday. They worship God in their own language. They do that in their community, reaching out to their community. And they are there, and we partner with them in sharing the gospel in ways that we cannot do at West End Presbyterian. So they have an effective way of reaching out to their people, and we partner with them in any way that we can. Once a year, we come together for International Christmas Celebration. And all the different, all of us, four of those churches come together in celebration of the birth of Jesus Christ. Sing song in different languages, hear scripture in different languages, get to have a meal together, and just get to know each other better. This is what we do it around Christmas time. And it's just really a rich time for us to get to know each other and to fellowship with one another. And this is one of the unique and things that we do at West End. Any question before I share about this guy here? This is Ehab and his family. They're from Egypt. Ehab came in 2012. A friend introduced him to the church, to West End. And the first day he came to the church, he began to talk about, my family. It was like, okay, just you get to come down. What is going on? And he's began, my family, I need my family. It's like, okay, we want to hear more. What is going on? So I get to meet him, talk to him, and he began to talk about, you know what, my family has to come before 3 months. If they don't come in 3 months, then the visa will expire, and then I will never see them again, maybe unless after 5 years. So we began to talk and get to know him and say, what is going on? How you got here? And then he said, well, I won the lottery, and immigrant lottery. And he said that because we didn't have money, I told my wife and my two kids, stay here. I go to United States. 3 months for Egyptian, I think, is a long way. It's a long time. He thought that he would come, and just right away he would get a job and send money to his family, and they will be here. They were ready. The visa is there. Everything is there. It's just the ticket money, which was about 1,000 or something. Well, he got here, and he was really... So one month was gone, and he's getting nervous. He's really getting nervous and agitated. And it's like, okay, the time is clicking. I need to get my family here. So he heard about West End and how West End helps people. So he comes, and we talked to him. And then I connected him with the deacons that help him kind of better understand the mercy ministry, and they help in that aspect. And the deacon were really compelled by his story, and they said, well, we need to help this guy to bring his family here. So they kind of fill in and paid for the ticket for his family to come. So July 2012, he was reunited with his family. And there is their picture from the airport. Actually, a member of West End drove with them from Richmond to Washington to get his family here. So it was really a neat thing. And now he goes to ESL. He is working at Walmart. His wife comes to church regularly. They come to worship regularly on Sunday. His daughter and son. They go to the preschool at West End, and they become a member of the community of West End. They are there every Sunday. And Ehab is a sweet person. His wife is too. So this is one of the story of how really Western get involved in those mercy ministry and the neighborhood outreach that's going to come together in helping the refugees. Question.
When he first came to you, did he speak enough English to be able to communicate his problem? Because I think we have a man from Egypt in our family who's desperate. He keeps talking about his wife and his baby, but he can't communicate. And so we're trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. But he keeps insisting that he needs them to come and he needs a job.
So your question is, was Ihab, could he communicate with me?
And you have people that could help you translate for
okay.
At least establish what was happening in the situation. Yes.
Actually, I happen to speak Arabic.
Oh.
But Ihab actually went to everybody.
Okay.
And he is that kind of person that he would use his limited English to try to explain what he wants. So, you know, people, when he came to the church, he was looking for me, but he was able to get the message across that I need help. So I began to hear from the members of the church. There were a guy here yesterday from Egypt. He was trying to say this, and this is his number. So he was able to really tell what his problem was. And if you don't have somebody that speaks Arabic, that would be a problem because you want to understand. You want to understand what is going on here. Mm-hmm. So he didn't have that much English, but he was willing enough to really put himself out there and just begin to speak. He was that bold. I mean, he's just... And now he will go to the church with the bulletin in his hand and underline every word that he doesn't understand in English. Mm-hmm. And he will come to me, it's like, after the service, what is this word? You know, so he is that kind of person that really love, want to learn. So if you don't have anybody that speak the language of an individual in your congregation, I think first maybe you check out where the agencies around your area. What kind of agency is there? Is it Catholic Charity? What the agency that is working with the refugees? And talk to them about, hey, do you have anybody that speak those two languages? You can reach out to them and kind of ask them that, and maybe they will help you in that way. So, but he didn't have that much English.
Yes. What was a Coptic Christian?
Yes, he is Orthodox. Egyptian. Most Egyptian are Orthodox Christians, and it's just I think it was like kind of one of the oldest church, I guess. Just right after the Catholic, yeah, before, yeah. So he is. This guy is another example also of similar to Ihab, but is a little bit different. He came on a visiting visa. He was arrested and stopped at the airport because they was kind of trying to investigate why he's here. Because if you are on visiting visa, you should have some documents, you should have some connection with people here and things like that. So he didn't have any of that. And he has his brother here. So he's like, I'm here for my brother. I came here to visit my brother. And they didn't believe him. They're like, we want to call your brother. Give us his phone number. So they called his brother. And they came back to him as like, no, you are not here. We just talked to your brother. And your brother said that you are not here to visit him. So he was frustrated. And he didn't have enough English. So he's like, okay, I came here to stay. So he just threw it out there. He was frustrated. He said, okay, I came here to stay. And just by saying that, he was like, okay, we knew it. They got him. They put him in detention. And they said, well, you're going to stay here for at least 1 week, and your brother will come and will bail you out. But 1 week turned to be 3 months.
Oh, goodness.
And after that, he was frustrated. It's like, what is going on? I don't understand what is going on. And then, you know, so his brother kind of hired a lawyer, and they began to talk about all this misunderstanding that happened, and then they were able to release him. You know, but he didn't want to go back home. He said, I went through trouble already, so I'll just rather stay here. So he went through the process of asylum, and he hired a lawyer, and it was an expensive process. You know, and it's very tiring. He spent a lot of money, and it was, I think, last year when he got his asylum, and he was granted a refugee status. And the judge said, well, now you can, since you are a resident, you can bring your family. So he went through the process of getting his family here. So he's a believer, very strong believer. He comes to the church, and we prayed with him a lot. We encouraged him a lot. And one of the things that we do is you have to translate these documents that they have. So we did translate those documents from Arabic to English. We kind of help him kind of get some, we wrote a letter to his lawyer to say he's a member of the church and he is not a crazy person or somebody who can, you know, violent or anything. He is a responsible, loving father. So we wrote that letter. Actually, our pastor wrote that letter to the court when he had a court, and that helps for the court to know that this guy is a member of this this community, and you know, eventually they were able to give him okay to bring his family here. So it was on February 28th that his family came, and I drove with him from Richmond to JF Kennedy Airport to get his family. And this is one of the moments, the first moment that his family was here. He's hugging his son. His wife is there. So the reason that he said that he don't want his family to come through Washington, D.C. because he don't want them to get through the same process. let them go to New York. I don't know. He just said, like, no, I don't want them to go through what I went through. So maybe New York would be a little bit different. I don't know. I don't know if that is really. But we had to drive about 6 hours to go get them. That's how really offended he was, and that how really serious he was. Like, you know, I need my family. I don't want anything to happen. Somebody to tell them they can come and join me. So. Yeah, so that's Salah and Hanan Boutros. You know, this ministry is so, like, this word, it's a both way, it goes both way. You know, you serve these people, you see that they're precious, God loves them. You get encouraged. And also they encourage you, you know. They encourage you, you encourage them. You know, you get to see that fruit going on. It's a great way to grow the diversity of your church. And also, it's a very, very encouraging, you see the fruits and positive outcome of the ministry. As I said, significant. But also, you know, this is one ministry, so we don't have to neglect other aspect of addict, homeless, and other ministry that is around. But this is one of the ministry you can do if there are refugees in your area. So what you can do? What can you do? Identify who and where refugees are in your area. Just identify them. Look around. Who are there? Where the refugees are located? If you are moved to serve them, ask the World Relief, go to social services, local religion associations, secular and religion nonprofits. Just go around and ask where those people are. For us, we have Virginia Council of Churches in Richmond, Virginia. We have Catholic Charity. We have Church World Services. So, those people are there to kind of give you a sense of where the refugees are and where they are located and how can you can help them. Two, identify what your church is best at. You know, you cannot do it all. I mean, you might be able to do something, you know, our church, we cannot do it all. So identify what is your church is best at. Is your church able to get start an ESL class? Legal stuff, dealing with immigration. You have good people that understand that. You have people who are passionate nurses, doctors that would do medical or any other help. You know, you can be a friend to a family, can adopt a family, you know, those things. Job training, is it, what kind of things you can do, job training if you are equipped. There are people that are really passionate about finding job for others. You know, if you have people who are really looking for a job, just say, this is what we can offer for them. Housing, you can do that too if you think that there are people like who would be able to find them housing, renting or whatever, to help those people resettle. And, you know, I can't stress this enough, be a friend. Just be a friend, you know, be a friend. Sometimes language is an issue. You talk with signs, you like this one, that one. Just be a friend. You get in that awkward position.
So if you're an American and you just grew up in a regular small town America and you've never really been around a lot of immigrants, and now we're living around Washington, D.C. or something, or we have a refugee come to our church, if you're just being a friend to them, not like a deacon to immerse ministry, if you're just in Sunday school with them, what mistakes do people make as Americans in dealing with refugees, or what do we misunderstand, or what are we mistaken about in those relationships?
So what mistake we make?
The Americans.
The Americans to the refugees as we deal with them.
What do we not understand?
Well, first of all, if the language is a barrier, I mean, it's just one thing that everything will go wrong. I mean, just right there. You know, saying their name wrong, you're like, oh, where are you from? So it's. But what I would say just is the refugees, they love to be known. You know, that's one thing. They love to be known. They love that you give them time to try to say, it's very hard. It's just like you don't have that time. Just they want to say it. But you have to be patient. Really, you have to be patient because it's just going to take a while. It's going to take a while. I don't think I do have a really clear answer to that, but it's just you have to do it. You have to do it and just see it, how it happened.
Can I say something about that?
Sure, a comment.
With ours, we've learned that really love covers sin, you know. Mm-hmm. So whatever we don't know, if we are obviously being loving and so on, that is what is sensed and what is seen the most.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you have someone over for dinner and you serve them something they can't eat, you know, big deal.
Yes.
But they're in your house and they know that you prepared it.
Yes.
And there's
yes.
still the love factor, and it's going to speak louder.
Yes.
Can I also add something to that? A response. It's great.
Yes.
I think sometimes American volunteers want to do everything.
Right, right.
So remember that they need to learn to do things for themselves. Part of the goal is for them to become self-sufficient. So, you know, you don't need to, and it's not in their best interest to, like, take care of all their needs for the first 10 years they're here.
Yeah. And I think you're right. You're right on. And that we're learning that right now to let them help to define and lead practices or participate in their ministry. This is one of the things that we are now trying to learn and bringing the leaders of those groups and say, hey, we want to help, but tell us, how can we help you? Okay? And also, we want you to lead in this. We want you to be in this. Let them feel a sense of ownership of what you're doing.
Can you give some examples of that? How you're trying that, of giving ownership to the refugees?
So, what we're doing now, we have this once a month meeting, leadership meeting. Like it's a leadership meeting with neighborhood leadership meeting. And actually, we are looking at way to develop and enhance our ministry in the community. So, we're working hard to recruit the leaders, those who are leaders in their community, to come to these meetings, you know, and give us a sense of, hey, we are here, we want to help, tell us how can we do this. So you can begin to look for who are the leaders in the community. If, like in our case, we are, you know, it's like a privilege for us that we have those churches that meet there, and we can kind of go to them and say, you are a leader in this church, come, we want you, we want your opinion, we want you to tell us how can we serve you. So it's very difficult, but we are getting people here and now to come. So we have this guy Kumal that comes once in a while in our meeting. He's from Nepal and he's one of the leaders in the community, and he comes there and kind of say, give us an idea of what is going on, you know. So I think you can start something like that, begin to identify those leaders and bring them in and tell them, this is what we're trying to do, tell us what you how can you do this. You can do this in that group, as you know, that's what we are trying. It's very hard, but we are really trying to get there. Yeah.
Yeah. So along the line, you find out that somebody is illegal. There's a two different paths that you have to go, because if somebody comes in asking for help, you help what you can, but you can't take it to social services. They have no social security card. They can't, you know, in the job hunting, that's illegal to hire an illegal alien. So along the way, you're talking, these are legal people. Can you?
We run into that a lot. You know, there are people, I run into that a lot. Somebody came to me and said, can you help me? A lady came and said, can you help me? My husband is in jail, and he was driving, and he was arrested, and he doesn't have his license. He doesn't have his document. Can you help me? It's like, I cannot help you, you know. These are the things that we cannot help them. I mean, I cannot help you in that. And sometimes if you are arrested because of violation of traffic, sometimes might not affect you or might not get you deported or something, but in some cases it might, but it might not. But as a church, we welcome everybody, whether they're legal and or illegal. We welcome them, we love them, we offer this ministry that we have for them. But there are things that we cannot do in terms of immigrations and things like that, like trying to apply for them for those things, because sometimes if you open that might even be a problem that might open a door for them to be in danger. You see that if you begin to talk about, come and we will help you get your documents and paper. So you kind of you kind of signing up for them to open, and they might not come, you know. So it's very, we don't really tap into that. But they come, they get access to the food pantry that we have. We tutor their kids. They come to the ESL. You know, they get all those activities that we do at the church, but as far as legal stuff goes, we really, this is out of our expertise. Yeah. So, you know, look for churches and organizations that contribute to the refugees, and just try to partner with them. Try to partner with them and see if you, what can you do together as a church. Yes.
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes.
So we have an ESL program.
Uh-huh.
And we have a lot of people coming.
Uh-huh.
It's wonderful, and it's really meeting a need. But we constantly struggle with how to build that bridge between the ministries and the church and the gospel.
Mm.
And we have, you know, the gospel, just like MNA teaches for ESL.
Yes.
But only the ones who are already familiar with Christianity come to services,
mm-hmm.
and so on. Do you have any experience or suggestions?
So you are doing ministry, and you want to kind of move that. You are doing ESL, and you're trying to move that toward a ministry.
We're trying to build relationships with,
yes.
individuals and uh-huh. invite them to church and so on. But, you know, Sunday morning comes and we have no students there, and of course,
yes.
that's what we want.
So,
but, you know, I know there's a balance.
Yes.
I'm trying to figure that out.
First, I'll come back to you. We have, in our context, there are some non-Christians in our community, right? But we invite them. We say, you are welcome to come to the church. You know, and it happened that we change our food pantry hours to Sunday after church, so that as they come, they'll see the church, they'll see what is going on. And we invite them, we say, you are welcome to come to the church. And also, you are welcome to come to the, your, if you want to come to the English-speaking service, you can come. But also, there are other, you can come to the Nepali, if you're Nepali, you can, so we kind of direct them to those places. Now, within your group, if there's somebody that you see that is like, could lead a Bible study or could start something, you can begin to kind of invest in them in some way. You could begin to talk to them about, hey, come, you know, if they're Christian, would you be interested in starting, say...
So like asking as, Zillion,
yes,
to start a Portuguese to start, Bible
yeah,
study
right.
With our church or within the ESL students?
It's good to start with the ESL students.
Yeah.
Start with them. Because now English might be afraid of, you know, they have these self-esteem, they don't want to speak English, you know. So start with the ESL group, start with them and say, on Sunday morning, for instance, come for this, you know, this class is for,
in your
language or in English. We started something in Western, maybe this is will help you, is we do it International Friendship Night. We started it last year. And what happened in this, we invited all the international in our church and in our community to come. And it's open to everybody. Who, and it's in English. We tell them it's in English. But we're going to be really using simple English. We're going to be patient for one another. We're going to try to really... listen to them. And in that class, you know who comes? So we have Egyptian that don't speak English. We have a lady from Mexico. She comes and she doesn't speak English. And we have some people that speak fluent English. We have our people from members of Western that comes and they speak English. In that group, so we do a Bible study. It's a Bible study. We do a Bible study. We make it very simple that every day we have one verse, just one verse. That verse might talk about righteousness. What does righteousness mean? Last week we talked about the church. The topic of last Wednesday was church. What is church? What is church? And then we divide them into groups. We divide them into their language group so that they can go through the study freely in their language group. So we've got a Arabic group, Spanish group, and English group. And after they talk about that, we will come to a big, like a large group in English. So now they talk in their group, and they understand the topic, and now we come and speak in a large group and say, okay, this is, we're talking about the church. What were you talking in your group? So they kind of talk and they kind of tell us what they learned. So it's kind of working now for us. But you might try something like that. It's very hard, but it could be done. It could be done. All right. So these are some resources that you can get into if you want to get some more information. And then let me go if there's something, okay, question. So I'll keep this here. Any questions? I think we've been asking questions, but.
Shagwan, I just make one comment. That ESL workshop this morning was extremely good for talking about what we can do to reach out to people in the community through the ESL program.
Yes.
And how you can get other programs going. How you can bring people into the church and this kind of thing. It's fantastic.
Yes, I found that very, very encouraging. So if they have another one this afternoon, you should go to that. And really, it's good. Yes?
How large is West End Church?
How large is our church? So about 800 people? Yeah, it's about 800 people.
800 members.
Yes.
happens. And how is it that Richmond, do you think, has such a significant population of the various Nepalese and I noticed you didn't mention Chinese, for instance, or how do certain groups end up there? Is it because of refugee programs that bring certain groups there, or?
Yes, I think that's the reason. It's that the Nepalese that are coming, they all are refugees. Uh-huh. And that we are seeing, they all are refugees and are sponsored by Commonwealth Catholic Charity.
Okay.
And the Commonwealth Catholic Charity is kind of resettle them in Richmond, in that area, yeah. And also the Church World Services, one of the organizations also that kind of resettle people. So those organizations are in Richmond, Virginia, and they resettle people in this area. So if you're coming as a refugee, yes, those people get you there. And I don't know about the Chinese, if they're coming like students, then they might have a better choice to choose where they go or where to be. Yes, Andy.
Yeah, a couple comments. At a Korean church, I believe, meeting in the building as well.
Yes.
But it's also reflecting trust, your openness,
mm-hmm.
you know, for believers. If you need a place to come together and worship, our building is open for that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were there, I think, maybe for a year, and then they found their own building. They moved
right.
on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's just that openness,
mm-hmm.
open out, and engaging with other nationalities, doing that, and then bringing them in. A couple of things I wanted, and I had the privilege now for several years to work with Sharon Wagg and serving this ministry, serving with him. And that is, I'm not sure if it was clear, but we use a lot of our kids.
Mm.
We're not using them, but yeah, we do.
use
so a lot of
kids.
Activities, we bring our children, my children come to track club, for example. We went to the ice cream socials, and I'm not sure that they feel like they're serving there. That you need more of it. But you know, that's really where we get from the parents. I feel a lot of that is that we serve with the children. We bring our own children. That gives me an opportunity to talk to the parent of the children on their locations. And I think what one of the problems we're making as Americans, and I have a German accent. I've been here for 30 years,
mm-hmm.
and I don't make many of the same mistakes. You know, I think sometimes we're looking at these refugees as, well, we need to help them with material things. And yes, they need some of that. But I think what Shangwa was saying, just listening, paying respect. I've met dentists. I've met surgeons, accountants, business owners, people who make at a much higher standard of living than I ever will have. They have the most schooling and education I ever will have. They are now, because of during their families, they are now cooks, work at the Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times in America, you're looking at what the person's status is versus the person mm-hmm. in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And once you really actually start talking to them, give them the time, have the patience,
mm-hmm.
it's phenomenal.
Yes.
The conversation you can have with those people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you share any wisdom or best practices on helping people who are vastly underemployed like that? Who have skills in their nation of origin and then are working at Wendy's successfully?
Yes. So one of the things I could tell you for sure is we tried in our context to use Job for Life material. Now, and we had a team to kind of evaluate and look at that and also kind of say how that's going to work in our context. We have people that are, you know, we have like people speak different languages. And that is like a course. And also the language that it used to is kind of very, really, it's English, and sometimes it's very hard for people whose English is not their first language. So the conclusion that we reached into is like, that will not work in our context. Because most of the refugees, they are concerned about, I need a job right now. Right? So going to a course to get you to get a job is kind of like very hard for them. You know, get me a job and then maybe we'll come to this class. So that's one, we tried to use that, so, and it didn't really fit in our context. And another thing that I now use and kind of direct people to is with Church World Services, there is a specialist man that kind of work with the refugees. So when they come to me and say, "This is, I'm looking for a job," sometimes I say, "Okay, let me connect you with this guy." So I call this guy, I call them and say, "I have a friend, I have somebody that is looking for a job. He was doing this in his country, and now he's looking for a job." So I will connect them with that person, and then from there, he would give him what he has. And sometimes they don't have the job that he, you know, the type of job he's looking for. So he will tell him, "Work on this first, and then we'll get you there." So sometimes it's for them to do whatever is right there, and then as they continue to work faithfully, you will guide them through their, you know, what they were doing back home or
research.
There's some kind of thing that they need to do first. And sometimes they have to go to school to kind of reevaluate what they did back home and go through some training. But in the meantime, they have to do something, whether working in a restaurant or a company or something. They have to be doing. They have to be willing to do that. So I think if that's answer that question.
So I was watching you show the different worships for the different language people groups. It came to mind that in the context of family, are the second generation children responding with their identity in a way that you could share, as they see their parents move them here as a family unit, but then are they taking on their identity as an American? Are they desiring to connect with their people group? Like today's Korean church is kind of struggling with the first generation Korean and the second generation Koreans. Is any of that emerging to your knowledge in your community?
Yes. So your question is the second generation and with their first generation or with their parents, where they were. Okay.
How do they see this connection point in the church? Specifically the families worshiping at church is what I'd be interested
in. In my experience and my own experience at home with my kids, I struggle a lot. You know, I struggle in kind of try to teach them my language. And now I speak Arabic and Shuluk. So I have to decide which one, you know. And so my family, we decided to go with Arabic. So at home we speak most Arabic, and then English when we go out. And sometimes, look, I made this point sometimes. It just was crazy, and I said, "Thursday is the Arabic day. Nobody speak any other language, only Arabic." And you can see that, you know, that day is a very quiet day. You know? It's a very quiet day. Nobody want to talk. Because my kids don't know. They don't speak like Arabic. They don't have a lot of words. They can say, "Get me water, sit down." And so it's very hard. Now, it's come to worship. We have discovered, like, we have a Sudanese worship that we do at West End. And kids seems to be kind of disconnected from that. So you see that disconnection. You begin to see the disconnection from the first generation. I mean, and they kind of turn to lean toward American culture. Now it depends on where they are located, you know, and what part of city they are in, you know. So at West End, we live in West End, Richmond. So, and people there, I think they're loving, and we're trying to just bring those kids. And it's okay if they're trying to lean toward American culture, but there's nothing you can do about it. And parents are fighting very hard. I mean, they're fighting very hard. In our worship, we are fighting to get them sing, to get them respond. It's very hard. It's very hard, but they're trying. And I think every refugee family goes through that, and I think it's very hard. Korean and other Chinese and other people, I think they seem to be more stronger group, I think. I don't know. But with the African, it's very hard. African tend to like, "I'm here, I'm American. I don't, you know, Africa is Africa." And sometimes I hear parents saying, "Well, I'm not an African. I was born here." So it just is very hard. And parents are really struggling so much to get their kids to learn their culture. But it's very hard. they're fighting so hard.
Thanks for
yeah. Yes. I have 3 minutes. 2 minutes. All right. Last question.
Do you have any advice in terms of, particularly with some of our refugee families, like helping them navigate the internet and technology? Because I think one of the things that we're finding, particularly with the children, is that some of our refugee families are coming in and they're getting computers or, you know, they're getting access to the internet and they don't have any discretion. So letting their children, you know, look all over online or watch television that, you know, I mean, if I were a parent, but I didn't understand what they were saying. I guess visually you can kind of see what's happening, but sometimes it seems like there's a need there to try to help them figure out how to, like, for example, just set up, like, a filter on their computer or how to just help them, like, guide them through some of the technology. Do you ever find with working with refugee families here that that's something that comes up? Or?
Yeah, we have, and actually we tried to address that in one of the conferences that we did. And actually, for people in our in the Sudanese community, and we talk about that to the parents. We tell them about how, you know, make sure that your kids know what they're doing. Make sure that you are with them. Make sure that, you know. So we have those when we do them in kind of a conference setting, ways of kind of educating the parents about the internet.
Do you so, like a seminar?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a, like we do that as a, we did that once as a seminar, but I think it's a good thing to do, and I think parents were glad when we did that, and it's just, it's an amazing. And we told them that if, you know, there, anyway, there are a lot of things, but it was a really good conference that people talk about that. Well, thank you, everybody. You have any